This is Sustainable East End, a monthly show about land use, energy and water resources, transportation, and the farming and food industries on the eastern end of Long Island. With co-producer Tony Ernst, I'm Francesca Rhiannon. Our region faces numerous environmental challenges, from climate disruption, sea level rise, and ocean acidification to poor water quality. We also need good-paying jobs and a green recovery to meet some of those challenges. All these issues are on the table in the 2020 election, from the local to the state and federal levels. One example is the planned South Fork Wind Project, first proposed in 2015. It's a wind farm off the coast of Long Island, 35 miles east of Montauk. The South Fork Wind Project would help the state reach its goal of 70% renewable energy by 2030, and the goal of East Hampton Town to have 100% of its energy needs met by renewable sources. The project reached a major milestone when state agencies signed a joint proposal to allow the project to move forward. Despite opposition from a small group of very wealthy homeowners at the site in Waynescott where the power cable from the wind farm would come ashore. But the fate of the project could still be decided by the outcome of the election. This month I talked with climate advocate and East Hampton Town Democratic Committee Chair Kate Rogers about the project and about water quality issues, the climate crisis, and job creation. Here's our conversation. Kate Rogers, welcome to Sustainable East End.
Thank you, Francesca. I'm so happy to be here.
So you are a climate activist, and you're also chair of the East Hampton Democratic Committee. Is there a link between these two roles of yours?
Yes, there is a link. I have been a climate activist, first and foremost, for a very long time. I went to a Climate Reality Project training in 2017 in Pittsburgh and felt more invested in getting more involved. One of the things that I realized while we're trying to make this transition to renewable energy to find solutions to the climate crisis is how important it is to have climate smart decision makers sitting in the decision maker seats. There's a lot of opposition to making change. And I understand that as a person, you know, it's not easy for us to change. So all the help that we could have is an easier path to success. So while I say climate change isn't political, it is important to have people that understand climate change and the climate crisis we're in right now in those elected seats.
Yes. So we'll get back to that just a little bit later when I ask you about races here on the East End and kind of what's at stake. But first of all, I wanted to ask you about a recent decision by five New York State agencies that signed on to a proposal to land an undersea cable for the South Fork Wind Farm on a beach in Waynescott. This was hugely controversial. There was a group made up of some residents of Waynescott who have been opposing it tooth and nail, and who I just wonder, what's the status of this? A lot of our listeners kind of know, you know, generally what's been going on with this case with the South Fork Wind Farm because we've run quite a number of episodes about it. But tell us what's going on now and what's going to happen in the future.
Well, the agreement that the agencies have signed on to, and that's every state agency that's participating in the review of the project, the project that's before them, as I'm sure your listeners probably heard already, is strictly for the transmission cable that will connect the wind farm to our electric grid out here. As I'm sure your listeners know, we do not meet our summer peak demand. So there was an RFP put out for additional power. One of the responses was a clean energy, renewable energy, offshore wind farm. The other responses were for additional fossil fuel plants. And of course, those won't be built in East Hampton. Those will be built in some other community, which will become another fence line community to the impacts of fossil fuel burning plants. LIPA didn't base their decision because on that situation, but it was the least expensive way to bring additional energy to the South Fork of Long Island. What's before us in the New York State Public Service Commission is the transmission cable landing. And that landing consists of going under a particular beach, the beach in Waynescott, via directional drilling, and then continuing 4 miles north, northeast, under the roadways to the substation. And what a joint proposal is the construction protocol. So there has been, I'm a party to the proceedings, and there's been action, the part of the permitting process called the settlement negotiations. Now, everything in that's discussed in those meetings, and they've been going on for 10 months, is confidential. However, what has come out of these meetings is now on the site and made public, and that is the plans for the application and the approvals from each of the state agencies. They call it signing on to the joint proposal, and their comments and testimony from each of the agencies has been put on the record as well, and that's easily accessible for your listeners by going to the Public Service Commission website and searching for Deepwater Wind. And they can see what the state agencies had to say about the construction protocol and what their input was and what they have signed on for. They've also all left it open for additional review and protocols to make sure during construction it's built in the least environmental and human disruptive way possible. So that's the part of the application that we're at. And this was... this was the final stage of this negotiated settlement between the developer and all the parties, and the state agencies have all now signed on, which is basically an approval to move forward.
The state agencies, I believe, said that the DEC, the Department of Environmental Conservation, said it was satisfied that environmental impacts will be minimal and primarily temporary. But that doesn't seem to have satisfied the Waynescott opposition group, Citizens for the Preservation of Waynescott. They're proposing an alternate route, which would be 9 miles longer and would land in Amagansett. Can you tell us the rationale for this?
Well, I guess they would need to speak to their rationale for proposing the route. They are the proposers, but the main result would be that it wouldn't go under their street.
Now, I understand that the construction is going to be in the off season in any case. Is that correct?
Yes, the construction is meant to be in the off season. There's very, very strict construction protocols that have been developed. You know, it seems like opposition groups like to paint those in support of a project as viewing the project over the public need, where this is not the case. Our advocacy, my advocacy, and through a group that was created here that I'm a steerer of called Win With Win, our advocacy is not one against the other. We want to see this project done right. It's the first one. It sets the tone for the governor's goals for the other projects that are down the pipeline. Plus, we live here. These are our neighbors, and we're not willing to sacrifice any neighborhood for the transition to renewable energy, because we know it can be done with protocols in place, with construction protocols in place. This is no different from laying water mains, from any kind of underground utility work, gas lines being laid down. This is a utility project, a utility infrastructure project. And we're just not giving carte blanche to this either. We want to make sure it's done right. We don't want the environment or the neighborhood impacted in a negative way. Mm. It's a false choice that we're advocating for this and we don't care about these other things. You know, if you're advocating for the solutions to the climate crisis, it's kind of stated that you care about humans and the environment.
One would think so.
Yeah. So, you know, there's a lot of, you know, and when you're in opposition, you have to pull out all the punches and try to go with what works. So there's a lot of misinformation, unfortunately, that's gone out to folks in the community. I live in Springs. I have underground cables. I have underground wiring. I don't have any overhead wiring. I think most developments since at least the 2000s have had underground wiring if possible. It's more expensive, but it's most resilient to storms, which is another aspect.
Yeah, exactly. In fact, a lot of people have demanded underground installations of electrical power from PSEG and didn't get it a few years ago when PSEG came in and took over from LIPA. I want to move on, Kate Rogers, to another thing that's coming up in this election, November 3rd. There is on the ballot something called Suffolk County Proposition 2. Can you tell us something about Prop 2 and what's at stake here?
Well, Prop 2 would give the Suffolk County the ability to divert funds from one particular account to another. And in this case, and while that's always suspicious, I always get worried about that. I think dedicated funds that were voted upon should remain where they are, unless it's the most extreme emergency situations. But for this one, we're talking about water quality. We're talking about funds that were dedicated for water quality being diverted out of that dedicated fund. And we must be very vigilant right now to not, particularly in a county, an entire county where water quality is an issue, specifically also here on the East End and in East Hampton, we are having problems with our water quality. And part of those impacts is the collapse of the Peconic Bay scallop fishery. Mm-hmm. So we're already seeing impacts. So to divert any money that's been dedicated and raised for clean water through our taxes must stay where it is. I'm against Proposition 2 in its entirety.
So this money was, according to a court ruling, illegally raided from the Drinking Water Protection Program. And would maintain enough money in the tax stabilization fund to help assist taxpayers in existing and new sewer districts. Now, these sewer districts and existing and new ones, is this something that could help, for example, in bringing in the, you know, advanced septic systems?
No, I don't see that as happening unless I'm misinformed, Francesca, and you can let me know. Those are that's a grant program that I don't believe has anything to do with sewer districts.
Now, interestingly enough, there was a report just in the last couple of days saying that Eastern Long Island Sound earns high grades in the latest water quality report. We got an A+ and an A in Save the Sounds 2020 report from east of Riverhead past Orion Point and Port Jefferson to Riverhead. The deterioration, the water quality of the sound deteriorated going farther west. Do you have any information about this report or about, you know, why there may have been an improvement in water quality? Because as you just mentioned, you know, I think this is the second year that is it true that the scallop harvest is so bad?
Yes, it's the second year that we lost our scallop harvest. And according to the scientists that study our estuaries, our Peconic estuary system, this is due to the warming of the waters, the acidification of the waters because of the warming, and directly leads to the climate crisis that we're in. I think you can, if that study, and I haven't seen it, but if that study doesn't include the state of the estuaries, the bays and harbors and ponds, then it's not really telling the whole picture.
Yeah, I don't believe it does. It's just about the Long Island Sound. So tell us just briefly the difference and why are the estuaries in so much trouble other than warming waters?
Well, the estuaries, the water gets into the estuaries through runoff In our neighborhoods and in our towns, and through underground sources. This is where it picks up all the nitrates from people's fertilizers and lawns and septic systems that are old and out of date, and we certainly have a plethora of those in Suffolk County. The numbers are huge on non-functioning septic systems, which is defined as a septic system that has to be pumped out twice a year. Here in East Hampton, we have many septics that are tidal. That's tidal, as in the rising tide. At high tides, normal high tides, that they enter into the bottom of the septic systems. And then they leach it out into our estuaries, our ponds, and eventually our bays. And eventually that leads into the Sound. But we have serious problems here with blue-green algae. It's not new. We see it every summer now for the last number of years, and that is directly related to the nitrates that we're putting into the water via our aging septic systems and lawn fertilizer practices.
This is Sustainable East End. I'm Francesca Rhiannon, and I'm talking with East Hampton Democratic Chair Kate Rogers. She's also a climate activist. Now, we started out today talking about, you know, one of the reasons you got involved with the East Hampton Democratic Party is because of your climate activism. The election is in about a month here. I wonder if you could speak to, you know, in as much as you're aware of the environmental record, say, of Congressman Lee Zeldin, who is the incumbent, versus, let's say, Nancy Goroff, who is opposing him on environmental issues in general and on climate change in particular.
Well, Mr. Zeldin's environmental track record is not very good. It's very low ratings. I think it's an overall 28%, 13% for climate action, which is pretty low according to his climate scores and his environmental scores. His actual votes in the years that he's been there have been, for example, 32 proposed climate actions that he voted against, and only 3 in the 4 years that he's been there that he's voted for, and none of these 3 actions were moved in the Senate, so nothing happened on them. So that I would say was pretty low grades on climate action for Mr. Zeldin. The other one, for example, is clean water. There were about 32 votes on clean water, and he voted against the environmental propositions 28 times, and 5-4, only 3 of those made it through the Senate. So, that is not a very good environmental record, a record I would have confidence in. But again, I really strongly suggest that voters do their due diligence, no matter where they are and no matter who's running for office on any level, to find out what their environmental record is, if they have one. And if they're new, then I would pay close attention to where they stand, particularly on the climate crisis. Because as I just saw a really good statement on social media that said, don't ask our politicians if they understand, if they believe in the climate crisis, ask them how well they understand it. It's not Santa Claus, it's science. And I think for a long time, we've been stuck in this loop of saying, do you believe in it? Do you believe? Well, we're way past the time of whether it's a question of belief. So as we've learned, and as I hope we've learned, again, who we put in the decision maker seats can make all the difference on whether we have a sustainable future. And we don't have time to wait 4 and 8 and 12 years for someone else to get elected. We need people that understand that we're in a crisis, that we have the solutions at hand. We have shovel-ready projects that are ready to go, which will reduce our carbon loads now. And we need to put those people in the decision-maker seats. And that's the question that should be on voters' mind. is my candidate up to speed on what's going on in the world in terms of solutions for the climate crisis? Is he or she ready to commit? Because you will always have opposition to any kind of change. We've learned that in anything you do, anything it proposed for a community, change is difficult and people are going to be worried about it, that it's going to negatively impact their life somehow just because it's different. So it's important to have people who have leadership qualities in the climate crisis sitting in the decision maker seats. For example, a tip about elected people is everyone's favorite position can be neutral. It's a very safe position. If you don't want to lead on something, you can always ask for more studies. We've heard this forever, and it might sound appealing. Yeah, we do need another study. But in the age of the climate crisis, where we're already experiencing the impacts here in East Hampton on the east end of Long Island, and we're already paying the cost through our tax dollars of trying to make our area more resilient by raising roads and raising docks, etc., we need folks who can lead, even though there may not be 100% certainty on something. That's crucial.
So speaking about that, and of course, I'm aware that you are the chairperson of the East Hampton Democratic Committee, so you have an interest in this, but tell us about, are you aware of positions that Nancy Goroff has taken vis-a-vis climate or the Green New Deal?
Yes, Nancy Goroff, well, you know, when you talk about somebody having a background in science, then the data is readable, understandable, and easily they can interpret the data. There is an inherent acceptance of peer-reviewed study and the understanding of what scientific consensus is. Because scientific consensus is a part of the scientific process unto itself. It's not easy to achieve. It takes a long time. It's not readily given. So I think her stance she's well-versed in the climate crisis and the needs for solutions. And she is positive on the Green New Deal. You know, speaking of the Green New Deal for Long Island, one of the aspects we fail to talk about as climate activists, and this is on us, is the job creation that'll come along with a new industry on Long Island. And we certainly need jobs outside of the service sector. So, you know, the union jobs that are out there right now or the electricians, it's all in the services, so the repairs and smaller jobs. We haven't had a large scale infrastructure change since the 30s and the 40s, particularly to our electrical grid. We certainly know with what happens during storms that our grid is old, it's aging, it doesn't serve us very well. It's very fragile and very vulnerable to even high winds. Forget about the larger impacts of climate change. So we don't really speak as much to job creation as we should, and that's why all the labor unions in New York support the Green New Deal and support the efforts for the transition to renewable energy with offshore wind and with solar.
Yeah, in fact, I spoke the other day for another news program on WPKN with Mariah Dignan of Climate Jobs New York. Can you tell us something about the kinds of jobs and the numbers of jobs that we could expect if, you know, as we go forward in the implementation of New York's new Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act?
Well, we'll see immediate jobs in the construction fields. And then what we hope to see, so to that end, I know that there is a commitment from the state on Long Island for wind farm technician training at, I believe it'll be at Farmingdale College, but it could be at Suffolk Community, so that I'm not quite sure about, but a new field of study. And we hope to see more of that in both wind and solar installations and repair. We also will hope to see on Long Island the creation of supply chain jobs and manufacturing jobs. manufacturing sustained Long Island for a very long time. Not all of it was clean and healthy, but there were jobs in the aerospace industry and the airplane production industry. During World War II, my mom went to work at Republic Airport. She sanded burrs out of airplane wings, and these industries fed families on Long Island. They helped us live, good union jobs. And we have had such a lack of industry here, that would be another win for us on Long Island if we also had that kind of job creation for supply chain and also for manufacturing.
And can you also speak to jobs in, retrofits or energy efficiency?
Yes, this is another very big field of ours. We have all these existing structures and buildings that need to be retrofitted. And again, these are not anything that needs to be invented. We have the retrofit technology now. It's becoming quite a big industry for folks who are thinking about jobs or something to major in college. Sustainability is a very fast growing field across the nation, and there's probably some of the highest job growth is in these sectors. So we are looking to retrofit buildings for LEDs, for insulation, for better windows, for more sustainable buildings and offices. And particularly with COVID, we could also see the need for newer and better ventilation techniques than what we have right now. And this is all growing industries with products that exist. So we have a really great path forward. We just need to have the will of the people to make that happen.
The will of the people translated into their representatives in government. Well, Kate Rogers, I want to thank you so much for talking with us here on Sustainable East End. You are a climate activist. Also, you are with Win with Wind, and you are the chair of the East Hampton Democratic Committee. Thanks again.
Thank you so much, Francesca. It was really a pleasure speaking with you today.
You've been listening to Sustainable East End. We spoke with climate activist and East Hampton Town Democratic Committee Chair, Kate Rogers. Sustainable East End is heard on the third Wednesday of each month at this time. Programs are archived at www.sustainableeastend.blogspot.com. Sustainable East End is produced by Tony Ernst and yours truly, Francesca Rihanna.